The fast of Tammuz is what we are going to study tonight and Thursday night. The fast of Tammuz and the fast of Ab are intimately related. They're separated by 21 days. And they're called the 21 days of, well, just Bayin HaMezarim. The 21 days of mourning are between the straits. It's the 21 days of being between a rock and a hard place.
Boy, we've been having it easy.
You're enjoying
Fast
it.
Fast of
Ab. It gets narrower and narrower and then it's
Oh, Terry, you haven't seen all the other fast yet, have you?
No, you've got to see
them. Oh! We won't be sitting in his left hand.
Yeah, that's a beautiful
sight. It's not a pretty sight.
What?
It's not a pretty sight.
Among the... the more pious, it was they fasted all 21 days. Not they fasted during the daytime, but from sunrise to sunset, for those 21 days. What?
Never mind.
All right, Dorsey, I've been asking for this for a long time.
Ow!
Like the Ramadan.
It's like the Ramadan.
Ramadan.
And that's where, in fact, that's where Muhammad got the month of Ramadan for the fast, except he got it. Muhammad got things screwed up, sort of like the Baptists.
Not quite.
But there are several things that took place on the fast of Tammuz. But let me, before we go into further than that, there's one central theme of the fast of Tammuz and all its readings, and it just so happens to be molten images. It's the readings are about the golden calf. They're about setting up the golden calf, the two in Israel. They're about the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel. But they're about molten images that are set up in the temple or in the holy place. And it's the mourning for and fasting for the grace that God will give you to see the vanity, the terribleness, the total enemy of God of setting up those images. And I'm here to tell you that every single one of you are without excuse, because these images are not something that happened to you. They are images, molten, that you have constructed by your hand. To give you meaning in a meaningless life. To allow fundamentally the role of all images, molten images, maybe all of them, but I'll stay in that one for a while, is to allow you the deception of seeing your life in time. That's the function of images. That's why they are so tremendous. That's such a tremendous enemy of faith. You understand?
Allow you to see your life in time.
Right. They give you the deception of seeing your life in time, in a specified time, by giving you something that doesn't permit you to see eternity.
Yeah. No.
You understand? All right. Now, bunches of different stuff happened on the fast of Tammuz. Now, it happened by alleged enemies of Israel to Israel, but you must see before you can understand that it happened by the hand of God, and these enemies of Israel were used by God to destroy liturgy. And the bottom line. So they were God's agents.
So they were, weren't they?
They were, obviously. Okay, the first thing that happens, the first thing it celebrates, it's on the 17th day of the fourth month, which is the month Tammuz. Now, Tammuz, that just happens to be what they call a month. It doesn't have anything to do with the god Tammuz of the Phoenician culture.
Well, it does, in the fact that it's the, I mean, it's the month in Babylon, or wherever it was, that's their name, right? And they named it for that god, and then the Jews borrowed it. Am I wrong?
Well, yeah, but it doesn't directly relate. It was just a name. In other words,
right.
Tammuz' celebration is in the springtime.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a directly relatable phenomenon, except that both of them's name were Bill, you know, that kind of thing.
The Jews wouldn't have connected it.
No. Now, it's so, in 586 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar broke through the walls of the temple, of the first temple. On the 17th. It took 21 days from that point until the temple itself was destroyed. In 70 AD, Titus and his armies breached the wall of Jerusalem, of the temple, on the 17th of Tammuz. It took 21 days from that point to destroy the temple. A coincidence? Historical Jewish game playing with dates of history? I don't know, but I'm just telling you what they say. The first thing it celebrates, however, is that the tablets were broken by Moses on the Fast of Ab when he saw the golden calf. I mean, the Fast of Tammuz. So there's something that's taking place. Something that has to do with a preliminary sense, a sensory perception of imminent doom. You can't imagine. Here's two tablets of the law written on both sides by the finger of God. If you remember, we've studied the garments worn by Adam and Eve and how they became icons throughout, and the all kinds of other icons. Well, here are two tablets of stone written on by the finger of God, and Moses was so zealous that he himself destroyed the tablets. So something so terrible took place on the 17th of Tammuz that from Moses' standpoint, he saw imminent and total disaster. You understand?
It's like he saw the complete impossibility of these people being redeemed.
Was there a second event there? Was there another event 21 days later in that case?
That's not directly related. Okay, now.
Scared me just now.
On the Fast of Tammuz, the offering ceased in the first temple. No more offerings. Maybe in the second temple too, but people don't know that. Once the wall was breached, they had no more offerings. Now, in the Bar Kokhba rebellion, which was literally the final destruction of Judaism, of well, the Bar Kokhba rebellion destroyed the possibility of there ever again being temple Judaism. There's synagogue Judaism, which is the apostasy. Temple Judaism was destroyed in its final state in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. That's when the Emperor Hadrian, in AD 132, the Jews revolted again in Palestine or in Israel. And their revolt, the battle cry of the revolt, was the rebuilding of the temple. They had to rebuild the temple. Rebuilding of the temple.
Hmm. Did you say AD 132?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is after it was destroyed.
After Christ. After 70, right.
Okay.
But there was still within, this was before the codification of the Talmud. It was before the setup of the classic Bible colleges, if you will, in Jania and other places. It was the point in time in which there was still a viable possibility, and possibly also there may have been those who knew where the ashes of the red heifer were. There may have been those who thought that it was possible to still gain back the Ark of the Covenant. There were those dreamers among the zealots who thought that through their agents and agencies in Rome and the Gauls and others, that they could gain back the artifacts of the temple that had been taken there in AD 70. So there was a viable hope in the minds of Israel after the flesh that the temple and its sacrifices could have been rebuilt. You know, gold wasn't $435 an ounce. Yeah, I mean, you understand what I'm saying. There was the memory of the artisans who were able to maybe mold and do the work that was demanded. It seemed possible without stretching the imagination. It wasn't a fairy tale like it is today. That they could rebuild the temple and establish the sacrifices. You understand that? All this rebellion began in 132. There was remnants of the rebellion all the way through. And every once in a while, they'd get rebellious, and then they'd get smattered down. And the centurions would go beat them up. And then they'd wait a while, and then somebody else would come up. But in 132, the real rebellion, Bar Kokhba was his name, right? The guy that led the rebellion. He's a rabbi.
Yes. This had nothing to do with the church.
Church
so
wanted it.
This was the believers.
The believers wanted it to be built also.
So, yeah, okay.
Same as they were believers today once. They were a bunch of Baptists wanted it rebuilt. Bunch of evangelicals wanted the temple rebuilt.
Right. Prior to that time, though, prior to 132, the Christians really hadn't separated from
No, the Christians and the Jews were in the same group. They just argued a lot. Do you understand that?
Yeah, I just realized these guys didn't even have to tear down the Dome of the Rock.
Oh, no. There was no...
It was Muhammad anymore. Mm-hmm.
You understand? Yeah, am I setting the stage?
Yeah. It's still true today.
Now, okay, so we got a bunch of zealots led by one of the key rabbis of the time. Another rabbi who is a great, great rabbi in history is Rabbi Akiba. Oh, there's an Akiba Academy right over here named after him. He was the spiritual leader. Bar Kokhba was the inspiration in terms of he was the guy that could marshal the troops. And so they started a rebellion, and their goal was to drive the heathen out of the promised land and rebuild the temple. It was during the time of the Emperor Hadrian, who now in Judaism is the most hated of all people in history. Even more in Hitler, in the conservative Jews, the Orthodox. Now, the reason I want you to understand this is because today we had interesting. I went to the temple today and studied a bunch of stuff, and I could not find any specificity with regard to the readings for the Fast of Tammuz. Well, the reason is that they don't celebrate.
Bucks never heard of it.
No.
And so it took the rabbi about an hour and a half, and he did it because he was embarrassed. It took the rabbi about an hour and a half to go through his own private library in his office, me being, of course, the only one in the other, you know, I'm always the only one in the library.
It's funny.
It's your library.
But he finally found, you know, what he thought were the readings, but he wasn't too sure about it. But anyway, that typifies what modern synagogue Judaism and evangelical Christianity are exactly the same. Both of them are hoping for the return of Messiah. Both of them, their total theology is based on dispensationalism. Therefore, none of them can ever understand what we are going to study tonight, the Fast of Thomas, and what it means. The Fast of Thomas is the recognition of the beginning of the end of the possibility of flesh being saved.
Yeah, the words you said a minute ago that really caught my ear were Israel in 132 AD marshals its own forces to drive the heathen out of the temple.
Well, there wasn't even a temple. To drive the heathen out of the land.
To drive the heathen out of the land. Marshaling one's own forces to cleanse oneself.
Right. It's a perfect example. The flesh, and the name in this case of Hebrews, was trying to cleanse itself. We saw the vanity of that when we studied the ashes of the red heifer the other night. You can't cleanse yourself. Now hopefully, this time, and we're not going to get to it tonight, but Thursday night, you won't piss me off like you did last Fast of Thomas. Meaning of life. Now, let me tell you. I want you to hear this. I want you to hear something. God, I love it when I turn right to the page. Life is made up of a series of very small victories. And the word of the Lord of the host, and the word of the Lord of hosts came unto me, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the fourth month. This, Thomas. The fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, the fast of the tenth, shall be to the house of Judah, in other words, the true house of Judah, joy and gladness and a cheerful feast. Therefore, love the truth and peace.
Where's that?
Zechariah 8, something or other. I just turned it. I probably could never do that again. So. No.
Okay, the fourth is Thomas.
Okay, don't go into that. Just trust me in this right now, Tom. That this fast is going to be turned into joy. You understand?
Okay.
For the true Judah.
Sweet
faith. Okay, now, the biggie that happened on the Fast of Thomas. No, I didn't tell you about it. We're back at 132.
Yeah.
The rebellion lasted for 3 years. And don't get spiritual on that 3 years. The rebellion probably lasted for 3.5 years.
You really want to get spiritual.
I hate it when you get spiritual.
It was a Tuesday.
And during that time, the final destruction by the armies of Hadrian occurred 21 days from now, or 21 days from the... But the breach of the wall of Hadrian by Hadrian's armies took place on the 17th, the fast.
So for the breach?
Huh?
Yeah, I thought the temple was already...
Just a minute. Listen to me. They had set up in Jerusalem for those 50-some-odd years, 60-some-odd years, that intervened between AD 70 and 132, they had begun to establish another temple. They began to rebuild the walls. They began to have a type of a altar. They hadn't introduced the sacrifices. But on the 17th, they not only t- took and breached that minor thing in the walls of Jerusalem, but they took one of the rabbis, and I don't remember his name, but it's not important. But the soldier named Apostomos, A-P-O-S-T-O-M-O-S. He was a centurion or a leader of the Hadrian's army. He was probably Greek. Took a Torah, a copy of the Torah, the roll of Torah, and wrapped this rabbi in it, and then set the rabbi and the Torah on fire. It was a way of the desecration that the Romans politically considered expedient. And, you know, if you imagine this, and this was done in a prominent place, allegedly by tradition, so that when the people saw it, it broke their back. You understand, for the Torah, for whom Israel was everything. And the rabbi, the expounder of the Torah, who was second only to the Torah. And Apostomos took these sacred scrolls, wrapped this rabbi in them, and set him on fire.
Flair for the symbolic.
Yeah.
Really.
Now the biggie that took place, and it just says it in the Talmud, it says it anywhere you look, is that it says an idol was set up in the temple. Didn't say when, it didn't say who did it, didn't say anything about it, but an idol was set in the temple. And the idol was, because of the readings, you infer that it was a molten image. You got it? And the readings and the ancient rabbis say it was the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel. But it doesn't say it happened. We're not at 132 any longer. We're at a point without time. You understand? It's on the 17th of Tammuz, an idol was set in the Jerusalem that now is, which was the beginning of the days of the days between the straits. And its final destruction occurred 21 days later.
So they were still fighting, say, in this Jerusalem area. I mean, the thing wasn't through until Fast of Ab, but the molten image, they say, because of the...
Well, no, don't separate this. There's five different things that happened on the Fast of Tammuz. Okay, what I told you, the setting up, the temple, the tablets were broken by Moses, Nebuchadnezzar's army breached the wall, Titus's army breached the wall, Apotmos's burning of the scrolls of the law with a rabbi, and the setting up of an idol.
At some point,
but the point that I'm making to you is that the setting up of the idol was not in their celebration, in the ancient celebration, never had a time set to it. It's the movable, it's floating, so that... Now, this is important, because I want you to see something. At some point, floating in space, without regard to time, they, on the fast of Tammuz, they fast because an idol was set up in the holy place. You got it? Okay, now go to Matthew 24.
So in each of these five instances, the same type of thing is taking place, like the golden calf
go where?
Matthew 24.
Well, they're not even linking it with Hadrian's.
No.
They're just saying that's one of the things they say what we're doing on Feast of Tammuz is
right.
Because an idol was set up in the holy place.
Exactly. Period. Exactly. Okay. Matthew 24, I think. Matthew, well, you don't. If you're not there, don't worry about it. Matthew 24:15. Jesus is speaking, and he says, "When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Understand? Let's go see what Daniel said. Go to Daniel 7. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. It's a biggie. Because all of modern religion is based on an interpretation of that scripture. And a misinterpretation of the 70 weeks of Daniel. And this is where we will severely depart in crystalline manner from all other religions that I know of. Because it identifies the point of disagreement. It identifies the difference between covenant theology and dispensational theology. Daniel Chapter 9. This is what I got pissed off about last year and didn't continue on.
Could you give us a hint what it was exactly that pissed you off? So we won't stumble into that.
Why bring up old stuff?
Could you perhaps give us
a hint? Didn't understand.
Nah.
Don't you remember?
Nah.
What? Yeah, we didn't understand.
There's a whole lot, with all of the fast, there's always prayers of confession and forgiveness, and confession and forgiveness, both individually and corporately. Now, I want you to understand, when I've talked to you about molten images, that they are common, they're community. That's why it's so devastating to some of you, like last night to Pete with Rick and others, when someone is on the hot seat, that there is a, oh shit. The reason is, and I've given you, you know, I've talked about Buddha and ugly idols and all that stuff, but there's really only one idol. The only difference is that it's your perception, your internalized perception of that one idol that causes there to be the appearance of a society. That causes there to be the appearance of tribes and nations.
Self-dividing languages.
But there is only one molten image that's set up as the abomination of desolation. And each of you have a different perception of that singular molten image. And your perception of it defines your you-ness. You understand?
But is it your real
like
you? Your usness. Your you. Your being you. Who you are.
But it's not your real
you-ness. No, it's the you that's the it's the you that's created by this idiot that raised himself from the dead.
It's your high places.
You got it?
Yeah. If you saw fully, we wouldn't look at all different. None of us.
We wouldn't see. We'd see no man after the flesh.
But I mean, even looking at our high. I mean, if we saw clearly each one of these things that has been described in particular to us would all be the same thing. It's our perception of it.
Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun. Yeah. Okay.
You know, if you back off, the high place and all the activity just becomes a target for the, you know. It's just a point to be destroyed.
I don't got it. What is this idol? He said it's all.
Yeah, what
the
is
same.
The idol? You didn't say what the one, really only one.
Self-protection.
Yeah.
It's a picture of yourself like
each idol. Users. No, it's not yourself. It's what every man worships for emotional well-being. And it defines, and he is defined in terms of what we call individuality by you are defined in terms of your individual identity by your offering to that idol.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a specific name. I mean,
it does, but he wouldn't make any sense to you.
Okay, but
it's got a name. Jesus called it the Abomination of Desolation. That's the name.
Did you say at one time that the molten images are basically emotional and graven ones are basically logical? Mm-hmm. So, the emotional makeup bears a direct relationship to the idol, the molten image.
Okay. Yeah, and when I say that you have created it by your hand, that's true, but what in a better way of saying it is in the cosmic. I mean, you understand if I talk about something, and I talk about it here at this point, then I pull out and talk about it from a farther perspective, and then I finally will pull out of it and talk about it out of time. It's all the same thing. It's like when I say you have created that molten image, what you have created your perception of that one image, and you have created your offering to that, or your Eunice has created the offering.
And that's what we see as our personality.
And that's what you see is wrongly see as your personality. It's really your individuality.
Just our offerings to our.
I mean, because see the intellectual, what you classify as intellectual or graven, they're really not very strong. I mean, they're really, you know, they're
wimps.
They're wimp idols. Good. But the molten image, because it is, well, I mean, to the world, the graven images are strong. I mean, I'm talking about from our perspective.
So you're wet, hungry.
Yeah. Right. But from our perspective, I hate to talk about this yet, but from our perspective, and I don't want to make this sound weird. From my perspective, the molten images are nothing. From your perspective, if you're in the hot seat, they're deep, big stuff. Or if you're in sorrow or mourning. Or if you're celebrating the fast of Tammuz. That's the point of recognition of the idolatry. Because a hole has been broken in the wall. Broken in the wall. There's a breach in the wall. Before that, you couldn't see it. Am I communicating? I don't want to get too esoteric here, but all right.
No, you are getting too esoteric. I still haven't figured out how I'm worshiping it, or I can't even see it really.
Well, then we have to break some walls down. You have to listen to some tapes that you haven't heard yet while you were gone. In the verse 2, chapter 9, verse 2.
What did you just say?
Daniel chapter 9, verse 2. The verse 1, it just talks about the year that he was in the sun. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, his meaning the first year of Darius. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by... Let me talk about Daniel a minute. Daniel is simply another type of the spirit of Elijah. Daniel, but he's also, I mean, it's like do all of you understand the Avesta, the Zend Avesta? We've talked about that, right?
No.
The Zend Avesta is the Persian Bible, holy book. And there's not much, I mean, there is no completed copy in existence. There are pieces of it. There are parts of it. And it was the Bible of the Magi, the three wise men that came to identify the Christ in his Bethlehem. These men, the Magi, were part of a religious order that was an order of priests, but a priestly order that had great deal, humongous amounts of political control and great benefits and great consultations in Persia. And Persia was a biggie, if you remember. I mean, they, what we now call Iran, at one time controlled most of the known universe. Now, their holy book was called the Zend Avesta. And it was written or codified by a man called Zoroaster. And so their form of religion was Zoroasterism, or whatever, Zoroasterism. Whether it's Jewish pride or what, but it's what I believe. I believe, and it's written about by several, that Zoroaster was a student of Daniel. And you'll see if you read the book of Daniel that Daniel became a biggie. I mean, he was like the number one honcho. And Zoroaster was one of his students who took the mystery of God and turned it a little bit. Took the one singular truth and turned it and created. But there was enough truth in it that the Avesta, the Zend Avesta, predicted with clarity the location of the desired one, the Coma of all nations. So that's a little background of Daniel and Zoroaster and the Magi and all that kind of stuff.
Any questions? Just ask anybody.
Yeah, Bananas knows about this stuff. They primarily are responsible for your ideas of good and evil.
Well, the picture we have of the devil and everything.
The whole, yeah, up until the point of the Persian influence in Israel, the idea of a separate devil, Satan, was not known. What they believed was the word Satan in Hebrew means the opposer. So he was just the agent of God opposing stuff, testing. But because of the duality, in fact, there's a great, you could make the argument to say that the Avesta and the Persians are the cause of, are their first founders of communism, because of the idea of the dialectic.
Yeah.
But it's, their whole, the Avesta was all about the destruction of evil and the enhancement of good.
I got a chance over the time I was in Wisconsin to do an area study in Persia, and I ran across a lot of this stuff about Zoroastrianism, and the thing that struck me is that they seem almost like, exactly like the Baptists that we have now, because they were very oriented towards the idea that God, you know, will give you what you want if you do the right things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they were rich, and they heavily influenced Islam as it grew up, even though they were absorbed by it.
But they heavily influenced, unfortunately, they heavily influenced the Jews.
How do they treat Christ? Is Jesus the Christ to them, or?
Well, there wasn't, there, who?
They're gone by
They're gone.
I mean, they're just...
There's 500 living, allegedly, somewhere in yeah. southern Russia.
Yeah. Yeah,
that are trying to maintain it. But then you have a holy book. They're just trying to maintain it in memory and tradition.
It's a cultural.
It's a cultural.
They probably feel the same way about Jesus that the Hindus do, because they live around them and that's their culture.
Mm. But remember, the three guys who
the Magi
across
were,
the world and found him and worshipped him were priests of that religion.
Yeah.
They were looking for Messiah.
So then they think Jesus was the Messiah.
Well, those guys did. But... You can't make that leap in intellectual with any honesty.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, they don't think Jesus is the Messiah.
They may have. There's evidence that they may have at one point, but if they did, then they became Christians. So, you know,
that's just as bad. So.
How did this get to be a history lesson?
Yeah, we were about to read in Understanding by Books.
Well, anyway, we have reached a point of, we're not going to get to any further. But I want you to understand that the Fast of Tammuz celebrates the breaking of the wall so that you can see the idol. So our Fast of Tammuz, for us, it's going to be, even though we will fast, our fast will be turned into joy because of him. The Fast of Ab will be the destruction of the Jerusalem that now is, so that we no longer are plagued by the unconscious desire to have cause and effect or law. That's the real meaning and the spirit of these two feasts, or fasts. We'll study it in greater detail Thursday night. But please be here. We got a whole lot to cover, so please be here. Try to be here early.
Not like us.
Yeah. Don't be like Rutledge's.
Liken to the Rutledge's.
Yeah. Well, but this thing about the reason all this is so important is because it's when you see the abomination of desolation, then you shall stand in the holy place. And it's a matter not of the passage of linear time, but of revelation of seeing through the wall. Now that's not the idiots that, you know, are preaching, well, they're going to go over there and find, you know, and rebuild the temple, and Russia's going to attack them. That's not what that means. Daniel is neat stuff when you see it, because you can't possibly understand the book of Revelation without understanding Daniel. You can't understand Daniel without understanding the Feast of Thomas. Okay? Any have any comments?
Can I have one question about Israel today?
Mm-hmm.
Are people kind of backing off on the whole Israel issue now, seeing that it's just not working, it came together, and none of the stuff that they thought was going to happen has happened, and it's brought nothing but disruption?
They're not backing off at all.
I've read some stuff recently, it seemed that they're starting to ask questions. Well, I thought the forming of Israel a nation was supposed to...
Let me make a prediction. On Rosh Hashanah this year, which is, I think, September 17th, it's right in there, is the beginning of the 40th anniversary of the founding of Israel. 40th anniversary?
40th anniversary.
Now, you are going to see the biggest public relations effort you have ever seen about anything. And you and the American public, by the end of the year, again, Jewish year, beginning in September going, you will be so overwhelmed with Jewishness, it'll blow you away.
If Oliver North can change the entire country's opinion about something with just a talking head guy up there, you know, being open, I mean, with all this, they're going to have all kinds of manipulative specials on TV.
We're talking big. I'm afraid that because of that, the Palestinians are going to be placed in a feeling of total desperation. And when that happens, Katie, bar the door. I mean, I've got some stuff that's been told to me that's going to happen that's mind-blowing. And it'll all coincide with its 40th celebration of the founding of Israel.
Doesn't that coincide with what we're talking about right now, their whole program of self-effort to produce it?
Yeah, but I just want, the only thing I want you to see is that's not what we are addressing. Those things are the kindergarten efforts of the spiritual world. What we are addressing now is this. I mean, I don't want you to be influenced by the BS that's going to come on in the name of television, I mean, in the name of Israel, on television and the radio and movies and everything else for the next, I mean, it's going to start very soon. And it's going to explode. And if those that are, you know, if it were possible, it would deceive even the very elect. You want to see fireworks, pray, if that's what you want to see, pray that I'm on the air during the time of the 40th year celebration of the State of Israel. Somebody's got to expose its hypocrisy, its falseness. Well, we just got a little bit of Fast of Thomas, help enough to whet your appetite.
The breaking of the
wall. Whet our appetites for the fast.
Take it large, person.
Yo.
Men.
Give.